friends, the next topic, the rise of the novel in the 18th century. Introduction. In the 18th century, the years after the 40s witnessed a wonderful efflorescence of a new literary genre which was soon to establish itself for all time to come as the dominant literary form. Of course, we are referring here the English novel which was born with Richardson, Pamela, and has been thriving since then. When Matthew Arnold used the epithets excellent and indispensable for the 18th century, which had the little of good poetry of drama or drama to the boast of, he was probably paying it due homage for its gift of the novel. The 18th century was the age in which the novel was established as the most outstanding and enduring form of literature. The periodical essay, which was another gift of this century of to English literature, was born and died in the century. But the novel was to enjoy an enduring career. It is to the credit of the major 18th century novelists that they freed the novel from the influence and elements of high-flown romance and fantasy, and use it to interpret the everyday social and psychological problem of the common man. Thus, they introduce realism, democratic spirit, and psychological interest in the novel, the qualities which have since then been recognized as the essential prerequisites of every good novel, and which distinguish it from the romance and other impossible stories. Reason for the rise and popularity. Various reasons can be adduced for the rise and popularity of the novel in the 18th century. The most important of them is that the new literary form suited the genius and temper of the time. The 18th century is known in the English social history for the rise of the middle class, consequent upon an unprecedented increase in the volume of trade and commerce. Many people emerged from the limbo of society to occupy a respectable status and wealthy burgesses. The novel, with its realism, its democratic spirit, and its concern with the everyday psychological problems of the common people, especially appealed to these novices, N-O-U-V-E-A-U-X, riches, and provided them with respectable reading material. The novel thus appears to have been especially designed both to vast and aspiration of the middle and low classes and to meet their taste. Moreover, it gave the writer much scope for what Kajamian calls morality and sentiment, the two elements which make literature popular. The decline of drama in the 18th century was also partly responsible for the rise of ascendancy of the novel. After the Listening Act of 1737, the drama lay moribund. The poetry of the age, too, except for the brilliant example of Pope's work, was in the stage of decadence. It was then natural that from the essence of the drama, and to some extent of poetry too, should rise the phoenix-like shape of any literary genre. This new genre was, of course, the novel. Before the masters, before Richardson, Fielding gave shape to the new forms. Some work had already been done by numerous other writers, which helped the pioneer of some extent. Mention must here be made of Swift, Defoe, Addison, and Steele. Swift, in Gulliver's Travel, gave an interesting narrative, and in spite of obvious impossibility of the action and incident, created an effect of verisimilitude which was to be an important characteristic of the novel. The Corley papers of Edition and the Steele were in themselves a kind of rudimentary novel, and some of them actually read like so many pages from a social and domestic novel. Their good humored social satire, their eyes are the oddities of individual, their basic human sympathy, their lucid style, and their sense of episode, all were to be inspired after by the future novelist. Therefore, with these numerous stories like Robinson Crusoe, Moll Flanders, and Roxana, shows his uncanny gift of the circumstantial detail and ratio. Gripping narrative combined with an unflinching realism generally concerned with the seamy and sordid aspect of life, his lead was to be followed by numerous novelists. Defoe's limitation lies in the fact that these protagonists are psychologically too simple and that he makes nobody laugh and nobody weep. But his didacticism was to find favor with all the novelists of the 18th and even many of the 19th century. Some call Defoe the first English novelist, but as David Deses put in the Critical History of English Literature, Volume 2, whether Defoe was properly a novelist is a matter of definition of terms. The masters. Between 1740 and 1800 of the novels of all kinds were written. However, the real master of the novel in the 18th century were four: Richardson, Fielding, Somlett, and Sterne. The rest of them are extremely inferior to them. Oliver Elton maintains the work of the four masters stand high, but the futhil are low. The case was different in, say, the mid-19th century, when so many equally great novelists were at work. Fielding was the greatest, or Fersham. Sir Edmund Gosse calls Richardson the first great English novelist. The Fielding, the greatest of English novelists. Fielding may not be the greatest of all, but he was certainly one of the greatest English novelists and the greatest novelist of the 18th century. Samuel Richardson, 1689 to 1761. He was the father of English novel. He set the verso of the novel with his Pamela or Virtue Rewarded, 1741. It was in the epistolary manner. It took England by storm. In it, Richardson narrated the career of rustic lady Mad, who guard her honor against the advance of her dissolute master, who in the end marry her and in reformed. Pamela was followed by Clarissa Harlow, 1747-48, in 8 volumes. It was again of the epistolary kind. Richardson's third and last novel was Sir Charles Grandison, 1754. The hero is a model Christian gentleman, very scrupulous in his love affair. Among Richardson's good qualities must be mentioned his knowledge of human, particularly female psychology, and his awareness of the emotional problem of the common people. He completely and for good liberated the novel from the extravagance of lack of realism of romance to concentrate on social reality. The note of the morality and sentimentality made him a popular idol not only in England but also abroad. Thus, Diderot in France could impair him to Homer and Moses. However, his morality, with its strength and smugness and prudery, did not go unattacked even in his own age. Fielding was the most important of those who react against Richardson's sentimentalism and prudish moralism. One great defect of the Richardson novel, which is especially noticeable today, is their enormous length. The epistolary technique which he adopted in all his three novels, and essentially dilatory and repetitive, and therefore makes all bulkiness. He is at any rate a very good psychologist, and as one he is particularly admirable for what a critic calls the delineation of the delicate set, the sentiment as they shift and change, and the cross purposes which the troubled mind envisages when in the grip of passion. Henry Fielding, 1707-54. Fielding, in the words of Hudson, was a man of very different type. His was a virile, vigorous, and somewhat coarse nature, and his knowledge of life as wide as Richardson was narrow, including in particular many aspects of it from which the prim little printer would have recoiled shocked. There was thus a strength and breadth in his work for which we look in vain in that of his elder contemporary. Richardson's judgment of the Fielding that his writing were rustily low and dirty clearly suggests the fundamental contrast between the two men. His very first novel, Joseph Andrew, 1742, was intended to be a parody of Pamela, particularly to its prigish morality and lachrymosic sentimentalism. According to Wilbur L. Cross, Richardson was a sentimentalist, creating pathetic scenes for their own sake and degrading tears and hysteric into a manner. In Joseph Andrew, Fielding liked heartedly little against morbid sentimentalism and sham morality. After the ninth chapter of the book, however, he seems to have outgrown his initial intention of parody. Parson Adams on the immortal creation of English fiction appears and runs away with the rest of the novel. Joseph Andrew was followed by the Tom Jones, 1749, and Amelia, 1751. We may add to the list of his fictional works Jonathan Wild the Great, 1743, and cynically ironical novel which, as Lewis says, must have been written after a fit of gloom. Fielding's novels are characterized by a fresh and realistic moral approach which admits occasionally an animalism and ribaldry, a searching realism. Good-humored social satire and healthy sentiment in his abundant and coarse vigor, his common sense and unflinching realism, and his delight in physical beauty, especially female, he is essentially a masculine writer. He does not have the delicacy of Richardson. It may be said that it is not Richardson who is the father of English novel. It is in fact Fielding. As for Richardson, he is only the mother of the English novel. It is to the credit of Fielding that, unlike Richardson and most of his own successor, at least in Tom Jones, if not the other novel too, he provided a glowing model of a well-constructed plot. According to Coleridge, Tom Jones, with Sophocles' Oedipus the King and Ben Jonson's The Alchemist, is one of the three works in world literature which have perfectly constructed plots. Tobias Somlet, 1721 to 1771. Along with Richardson and Fielding, Somlet is generally included among the master of 18th century novel, but as Hudson points out, it must be distinctly understood that his work is one a much lower level than theirs. His novels are the picaresque kind and include Roderick Random, 1748, Peregrine Pickle, 1751, and Humphrey Clinker, 1771. Somlet was a realist and had his own art of racy narrative and eye-catching description. He was a keen observer of the coarser fact of life, particularly novel life. He exulted in coarseness of brutality. He never bothered about the construction of a plot, nor bid he brother about morality. Richardsonian or Fieldingian, his humor in keeping with his nature. Is coarse rather than subtle or ironical, and arise mostly out of caricature. Hazlitt observed in noted comma, "It is not a very difficult undertaking to class Fielding or Somlet the one as an observer of the character of human life, the other as a describer of its various eccentricities." Somlet's characterization is necessarily poor. His heroes are mechanical puppets rather than living personalities. there are meant only for the bringing in of new situations. As a critic puts it, Roderick Random's career is such as would be enough to kill three heroes and add the fellow lives just to introduce us to new characters and situations. Lawrence Stern, 1713-68. His only novel is Tristram Shandy, which appeared from 1759 to 1767 in 9 volumes and which is described by Hudson as the strange work of a very strange man. If this work can be called a novel, it is one of its own kind. Without precedence and without successor, Hudson observed in noted comma, it is rather a medley of unconnected incidents, scrap of out of the way learning, whimsical fancies, humor, pathos, reflection, impertinence, and indecency. Note comma closed. The plot is the briefest minimum. We have to wait till the third book of the birth of the hero, and he is put into breeches only in the sixth. What a pace of development it was, says Cross. Note comma. A sad day from English fiction when a writer of genius came to look upon the novel as the repository for the crotchet of a lifetime. Note comma closed. Stern's sentimentalism was to leave a lasting trace on the English novel which followed. What is quite remarkable in Tristram Shandy in the wonderfully living characters of Uncle Toby and Elder Shandy, his wife and Corporal Trim. The novel of Tristram. After Tristram Shandy, we find in the 18th century a remarkable proliferation of novels. But now of the latter novelists come anywhere near Richardson and Fielding. We find the novel developing in many directions. Four major kinds of the novel may be recognized. First, the novel of sentiment. Second, the so-called Gothic novel. And third, the novel of doctrine and didacticism. Fourth, the novel of manners. Henry Mackens, The Man of Feeling, 1771, is prominent among the novel of sentiment. According to Cross, in noted comma, written in a style alternating between the whims of Stern and winning plaintiveness. It enjoys the distinction of being the most sentimental of the English novel. Note comma closed. The Gothic novel, which appeared toward the end of the 18th century, indulges in the morbid sensationalism which impossible stories and supernatural monster blood-curdling incident. Horace Walpole, Mr. Radcliffe, Monk, Lewis and William Wakeford were the most important writer of this kind of novel. The novel of doctrine and didacticism includes such works as Mr. Inspat, Nature and the Art, and William Godwin, Caleb Williams, 1794. These works used the form of the novel just for propagating a specific point of view. The novel of manner was mostly patronized by fairly intelligent female writers such as Fanny Burney and Maria Edgecroft, who aimed at a high transcription of the contemporary manners. Sarah Fielding's David Simple, 1744. Dr. Johnson's Restless Prince of Abyssinia, 1759. And Oliver Goldsmith, The Vicar of Wakefield, 1766. Also deserve a special mention in an account of 18th century novel. Sarah Fielding's The Work was inspired by the success of Pamela. It abounds in faithfully rendered scenes of London life. Dr. Johnson's work is highly didactic. It emphasized the vanity of human vices in the form of an allegorical tale which he wrote in the very despondent mood induced by the death of his mother. Goldsmith's work in the word of Cross, in inverted comma, the of all 18th century novel, the one that many readers would the least willingly lose. Note comma closed. The novel is admirable, among other things, for the sensitive characterization of Dr. Primrose and the general sanity of the philosophy of life which peeps through it. The topic, Rise of the Novel in 18th Century, over.